Hello everybody and welcome to this week's recording of the Wallingford and District Talking Newspaper. We're reading articles from the Wallingford Herald published on Wednesday, July the 22nd, 2026. The three readers this evening are Amanda Potter, Sue White, and Nuala Clements. The copier is Pete Orton and the producer is myself, Lawrence.
Hello, this is Nuala. Councils to be scrapped with county split three ways. There are fears of a land grab for new housing with a decision to abolish Oxfordshire's councils, which currently run services, including roads, planning and education. The county, city and district authorities are set to be abolished and replaced by three new councils in local government reorganisation. The announcement was made in a ministerial statement at the House of Commons by Secretary of State for Housing, Steve Reid. The plan, put forward by the Labour-run Oxford City Council, has been chosen by the Labour government, and it will see a greater Oxford Council created, taking parishes from Charwell, South Oxfordshire, and the Vale of White Horse. There will also be a North Oxfordshire Council with the remainder of Charwell, along with West Oxfordshire, as well as a Ridgeway Council, taking up South Oxfordshire, the rest of the Vale of White Horse, and West Berkshire. An overarching county council will no longer exist, and all powers previously separated between it and the districts will go to the new authorities. Critics suggested this plan would be a land grab for rampant redevelopment, but the City Council's cabinet says it would help achieve much-needed targets and affordable homes. The new councils will come into force in April 2028, and the existing councils will continue running until that point. There will be elections for a temporary shadow authority or authorities taking place next year. This will oversee the transition to unitary bodies. A director for Oxfordshire's reorganisation is set to be paid a six-figure salary between £125,350 and £135,928 from the County Council payroll to manage this. Each new council is set to receive at least £900,000 from a £63 million government pot to support transition costs. The Lib Dem-run district councils and county councils had put forward different proposals for reorganisation. The districts of Charwell, South Oxfordshire, Vale of White Horse and West Oxfordshire proposed an Oxford and Shires Council, Charwell, Oxford City and West Oxfordshire, and a Ridgeway Council, South Oxfordshire, Vale of White Horse plus West Berkshire. The county council wanted a single council to run Oxfordshire, incorporate all the districts and city councils into one, without the inclusion of West Berkshire. At County Cabinet, fears have been shared about Oxfordshire residents bearing the brunt of West Berkshire Council's financial distress. The local authority has secured government bailouts and exceptional financial support to avoid effective bankruptcy. Questions have been raised about whether the reorganisation should go ahead, with hope shared by the local government association that a change of Prime Minister presents an opportunity to revisit some of the practicalities of the reforms.
Hello, I'm Amanda. Fears that changes will destroy Green Belt. Oxfordshire councillors and politicians have expressed outrage after the government decided to abolish local councils. The reorganisation will see the replacement of current county, city and district authorities with three new councils. The main worry is that housing and planning decisions will be transferred to a larger authority. Councillors are especially concerned about areas like Kidlington and Charwell, which have green belts that they fear may be developed. In a statement, Oxford City Council said the decision was about tackling the housing crisis. Freddie Van Mierlo, MP for Henley and Tame, criticised the decision, noting that villages like Wheatley, Holton, Waterbury and Garsington would now be absorbed into Oxford's orbit. He added, these villages sent a clear message that they didn't want to be part of a greater Oxford, yet they were ignored. Instead, the government backed their Labour mates in Oxford City and their plans to concrete the Green Belt. I'm determined now to send as many Liberal Democrat councillors to the new Greater Oxford Council as possible to block Labour from riding roughshod over the character and feel of our rural communities. Councillor Tim Bearder, leader of Oxfordshire County Council, said, I am deeply disappointed in the government's decision to split Oxfordshire up into three unitary councils. It does not deliver on its vision to simplify and improve local government services.
Hello, I'm Sue. And on the same theme, government abolishes authorities in historic boundary change. The government has decided to abolish Oxfordshire's existing councils. This decision, part of a national move to replace all remaining two-tier county stroke district arrangements with unitary county councils, affects more than 130 councillors across 14 areas of England. Oxford City Council has welcomed the changes, stating it will shape the future of Oxford, Oxfordshire and West Berkshire for generations. Currently, Oxfordshire has a county council and five smaller district or city councils: Oxford City Council, Charwell District Council, South Oxfordshire District Council, Vale of Wight Horse District Council, and West Oxfordshire District Council. These six main councils will now be replaced with three new councils: Greater Oxford Council, Northern Oxfordshire Council, and Ridgeway Council. Town and parish councils will remain. Greater Oxford Council will cover the areas previously managed by Oxford City Council and parts of Charwell, South Oxfordshire and Vale of the White Horse districts. Northern Oxfordshire will encompass what was West Oxfordshire District Council and the remaining parts of Charwell. Ridgeway Council will cover most of South Oxfordshire and Vale of the White Horse districts plus West Berkshire. The government argues that these larger unitary councils will cut duplication, save money and simplify services for residents. However, critics argue the changes could lead to a land grab for housing, favouring urban development over conservation.
UK-grown rice trials hailed in national awards. A campaign showcasing UK-grown rice has won a national award for excellence in science communication. The UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology, that's UKCEH, based in Wallingford, received the best STEM campaign at the 2026 Chartered Institute of Public Relations, that's CIPR, Excellence Awards for its communications work promoting rice trials in the Cambridgeshire Fens. Hosted in London, the CIPR Excellence Awards are considered one of the UK's most prestigious honours in professional communications. Kelly Lee, Head of Communications and Engagement at UKCEH, said the award recognised a major collaborative effort between UKCEH's communications and science teams working closely with our farming partner, Oxwillow. This partnership brought in innovative research to life, amplifying the visibility and understanding of how UKCEH science can help provide resilience to climate change. Judges described the campaign as the standout winner in a highly competitive category. The rice trials form part of a broader project exploring alternative land uses and crops in re-wetted peatland. Last year was the first time that rice was grown in the UK, alongside more traditional crops such as lettuce and pumpkins and other crops for bioenergy production and wildlife value.
Cop26 consultation on future of police. Residents are being invited to share their views on major plans to merge police forces across England and Wales. The proposals, as part of reforms, could see Thames Valley Police becoming part of a larger regional force under the suggested reduction from 43 to 12 forces. Matthew Barber, Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner, has written to the Home Secretary raising concerns about the plan. Mr. Barber said, "This is your opportunity to share your views on the government's proposal to merge police forces across England and Wales. Residents can share their views at https://www.thamesvalley-pcc.gov.uk/get-involved-police-force-mergers.
Warning to farmers. Farmers are being urged to take extra precautions to prevent fires during the busy harvest season. Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service is reminding those in the agricultural sector to create fire breaks, clean machinery regularly, and ensure water sources are close at hand. Fires can be caused by machinery, electrical faults, arson, or spontaneous combustion of stored hay.
Pub named finalist in prestigious awards. The owner of a family-run pub in Wallingford said she was speechless at the recognition the business received from the industry's most prestigious UK awards. Award-winning pub The Dolphin in St Mary's Street, Wallingford, has been named as a finalist in the Great British Pub Awards 2026. The awards, described as the Oscars of the pub industry, highlight the very best boozers in Britain and select their shortlist across 16 categories from an incredible number of top quality entries. The Dolphin has been shortlisted as one of the six pubs under the Best Green King Pub category. Emma Cox, landlady, said, to even be named as a finalist is something we're genuinely speechless about. We pour everything we've got into this pub, and to have that recognised on a national stage is an incredible feeling. This is for our amazing team and every one of you who has supported us, filled the bar, cheered at the football, eaten with us, laughed with us, and made the Dolphin what it is. Whatever happens next, we'll be celebrating this one. Thank you for being part of our journey." And there's a photograph of Emma Cox standing in front of her pub and looking very pleased with herself.
Coffee chain to open in former corner shop. A global coffee chain is set to open in a former coffee shop premises in a marketplace. Esquire's, the organic coffee company, has submitted an application to display branded signage for the shop in Wallingford. The premises was formerly part of a popular and long-standing convenience store, KP Wallingford, which announced in March that the business was consolidating by downsizing the store. The shop remains open after the reduction in space, now only accessible through the entrance on Feathers Yard rather than the front from the marketplace. A statement from KP Wallingford at the time said, They say that parting is such sweet sorrow, but this is not goodbye, but rather you'll need to use the other door in Feathers Yard instead. Some more astute readers may recall hints of a tie-up with Spar, but the increased costs over the past year and an imminent lease renewal have meant that the family feels that the risk is too great for the level of investment needed. Instead, KP is consolidating. So we are here, the same KP, doing broadly the same KP stuff in the same building, just half of it. Please pop by and see what we have been working on. An application for the installation of illuminated signage to the front of a building facing out onto Marketplace revealed proposed plans for dark signage and yellow lettering sported by the coffee shop. Esquire's Coffee has more than 90 stores across the world.
This article was headlined on the front page, Long-Running Biker Meet in Complaint. Oxfordshire's biggest and long-running weekly bikers meet, held at the long-standing cafe near Wallingford, has been hit with a complaint through the police on noise and reckless riding. H Cafe in Oxford Road, Beaconsfield, has hosted one of the county's most popular meets for motorcyclists every Monday during the summer for the last 15 years. But Thames Valley Police has issued a notice describing numerous reports from the people who live near the cafe on Monday evenings, including reports of excessive speed, aggressive riding behaviour and noise which is affecting their quality of life. A spokesperson for the police said, "Whilst the vast majority of motorcyclists ride responsibly, a small number of individuals can have a significant impact on local communities. Where offences or antisocial riding are identified, Thames Valley Police will continue to carry out enforcement activity. Our aim is not to prevent people from meeting at H Cafe or enjoying motorcycling. Rather, we are asking everyone to work together to ensure that riders and local residents can coexist respectfully." Shortly before the season opened for the weekly bike nights at the cafe at the end of March this year, long-time owner Richard Allen issued a statement asking for similar consideration. He wrote, "Last season, a small number of thoughtless individuals caused problems at our Monday meets with antisocial behaviour and reckless riding. Their actions put people at risk and damaged the reputation of our cafe and community and threatened the jobs of my amazing staff. This season, there will be zero tolerance for this behaviour. It comes as the latest in a long social media campaign, which began after its very first Harley-Davidson meetup took place in April 2011, attended by more than 3,000 people. The cafe hosts multiple fundraisers for emergency services every year, posts about riding safely and considerately, and even organises annual biker charity runs taking Easter eggs to Oxford Children's Hospital. Commenting on Thames Valley Police's post about the cafe, one person said, "I have ridden for as long as I can remember and love to get out on the bikes when I can. Unfortunately, there will always be a minority that will speed excessively and ride aggressively. I really hope the minority support your request." One Wallingford local said, "I'm not against your meetups in one location, but please think about others when travelling through. I have elderly neighbours who have opened their doors to give these bikers what for on one occasion, and I praise them, but they shouldn't have to do this." But another rider wanted to encourage more social cohesion between the groups and added, "Monday night is bike night, so residents should be aware there will be a high number of bikes on that night."
Pubs handed rates boost to ease rising costs. Pubs are in line for extra financial support to help with rising costs. South Oxfordshire District Council's Cabinet has approved a one-off top-up rates relief scheme for 2026-27, giving eligible pubs an additional 15% discount on their business rates to ease financial pressures. Maggie Filipova-Rivers, leader of South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "Pubs make a massive contribution to life in South Oxfordshire. However, many have to work incredibly hard to manage increasing costs. This additional business rates relief will provide practical support, helping eligible pubs remain resilient while continuing to serve their communities. The extra relief will be automatically applied to all pubs in South Oxfordshire that already qualify for the government's pub relief scheme, with no need for businesses to apply. Revised business rates bills will be issued over the next month. The council estimates around 120 pubs will benefit from the scheme during 2026-27. However, many continue to face increasing financial pressures, including higher employment costs and inflation. Councillor Filipova-Rivers said, "We're pleased to be able to offer this additional support and we'll continue to work with the sector while calling for the long-term backing that pubs need from national government. The council said it remains committed to working with businesses and partners to support a thriving hospitality sector in South Oxfordshire.
Home buyers left on the brink of homelessness finally have a reprieve after a software update was finally completed. Excuse me. Home buyers had been left waiting months to buy property due to a problem with the South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Council's software. But now the councils have confirmed the software update is back online and real estate in the area can resume. Richard Belleville, owner of the Belleville Estate Agency, said, "We have heard that the system was up and running yesterday, which is great news. The issue shall now be how long it takes to clear the large backlog. Only once that is clear shall we be back to normal. The hold-ups have affected South Oxfordshire and were caused by search delays tied to ongoing IT problems at the District Council. Searches carried out by solicitors to identify legal, environmental or planning issues that could affect the value or use of a property rely on information provided by the council. Delays had left home buyers in limbo due to a prolonged outage in the land charges system. The disruption has affected property transactions across South Oxfordshire and the Vale of the White Horse, with South Oxfordshire District Council confirming the issue began as part of wider IT upgrades. The system, which underpins legal property searches, had been offline since April to allow for essential updates. The two Oxfordshire councils apologised after the system software update left home buyers on the brink of homelessness. Councillor Maggie Philippova-Rivers, leader of the South Oxfordshire District Council, and Councillor Bethia Thomas, leader of Vale of Whitehorse District Council, said, "We offer our sincere apologies to everyone who has been impacted by the downtime of our land charges system. We fully recognise the frustration and uncertainty that this has caused for residents, businesses and professionals who rely on this service. We have been communicating with those affected throughout this process and want to thank everyone for their understanding while our teams have been working to resolve the issues and complete the transactions. Planning services, also affected by the upgrade, were only restored on June the 23rd. The disruption was first announced in April when both councils notified estate agents of a service pause from April the 9th to April the 30th, during which no searches could be processed or returned. These land charge searches are essential for solicitors to uncover legal, environmental or planning constraints that may impact property value or use. Delays in accessing this information have left home buyers and sellers in the districts in a holding pattern, unable to proceed with their transactions."
Police hailed for strong performance. Thames Valley Police have been recognised as a strong performing force under a new national assessment system. The force has been assigned level one under the policing performance system launched yesterday, the 16th of July, by His Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services, HMICFRS, in partnership with the Home Office College of Policing Independent Office for Police Conduct, IOPC, National Police Chiefs Council, MPCC, and Association of Police and Crime Commissioners, APCC. I do hope you're all keeping up. The new framework replaces HMICFRS's previous scan and engage model, aiming to provide a clearer assessment of police force performance while providing earlier support and intervention where performance is declining or causes concern. Under the new system, Police forces are assigned one of the four levels based on their current performance, level of support required, and the extent of engagement needed with the improvement process. Level one is the default starting point for forces with only minor controlled concerns, but are demonstrating a clear trend of improvement. It follows publication of Thames Valley Police's latest HMICFRS Peel in Protection Report, which recognises the force as an improving and innovative organisation, citing strong neighbourhood policing and prevention work and a significant improvement in workforce development, inclusivity and retention.
Graduates urged to apply for policing scheme. Graduates are being encouraged to apply for a national policing programme. Police Now is inviting applicants to its 2027 graduate scheme in Oxfordshire, which offers the opportunity to become a neighbourhood police officer. The two-year programme includes 11 weeks of training focused on core policing skills, followed by on-the-job experience with a partner police force. Katrina Smith, head of recruitment at Police Now, said, "We are looking for people who are interested in problem solving, team building and partnership work, which are themes that are really prevalent in the policing world. Perhaps they are an analytical thinker who is passionate about making change in their community, or someone with sharp instincts and a commitment to justice. Applicants don't need to have any prior policing knowledge or experience, but they must support our mission to make change where it matters most. Trainees work alongside serving officers, applying classroom learning to real-life situations. They also receive structured development through mentorship and coaching. Police Now has been recruiting graduates into policing for 10 years with the aim of transforming communities, reducing crime and increasing public confidence in the police service."
Homes Plan may be called in if refused. A plan to build 170 new homes in the countryside could be called in by the government if refused. Developer Olivia Holmes has lodged plans for a major new housing development in Benson near Wallingford. It comes as the latest development bid for the patch of farmland just south of Watlington Road, with previous applications for 120 and 180 homes made in 2018 and 2023 respectively, both failed. Benson Parish Council has issued a statement making locals aware of the latest application, saying councillors are aware that many villagers feel that Benson has taken more than its fair share of new housing in recent years. The statement refers to the Town and Country Planning Consultation England Direction 2026, issued in March this year by the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government. The direction says that any local authority which proposes to refuse an application for planning permission for a development of more than 150 houses and or flats must first consult the Secretary of State on the plans. The Minister for Housing and Planning, Matthew Pennycook, announced the changes in Parliament on March 23rd. Describing them as targeted measures to help stimulate housing supply and infrastructure provision. Benson Parish Council said in a statement that if South Oxfordshire District Council decides to refuse the application, the Ministry of Housing could decide to step in and grant the application over their heads. The statement added, "Currently, the Parish Council are in discussion with SODC to look at the proposal and identify potential issues that might be critical in decision-making, such as wastewater and sewage management, the proposed transport access and exit points, lack of local amenities, and the physical impact on the outer edge of the village. And of course, we will reference the Benson Neighbourhood Plan, which was used successfully at the recent public inquiry to defend the proposed 40-plus houses on the Rope Marsh edge of the village. At this stage, we'd like to gather the reaction of the village to this proposal. You can use this link to express your views, either for or against the proposed development. We will collate all the responses and use these in any future discussions with authorities.
Van driver fined after being caught speeding. A van driver has been fined and had penalty points after being caught breaking a London speed limit. David Taylor, aged 61, of Oakley Court, Benson, near Wallingford, was driving a Ford Transit on Victoria Embankment in Westminster when he was recording exceeding the 20-mile-an-hour limit. At Willesden Magistrates Court on the 15th of July, he pleaded guilty under the single justice procedure. Taylor was fined £160 and ordered to pay £60 in costs and a £64 victim surcharge. His driving record was endorsed with 3 penalty points. The court heard that he faced exceptional hardship as he relied on his licence for work, is the sole breadwinner, and his income covers the household bills and mortgage.
Bid to Save Towns Under Threat magazine. A group of volunteers have launched a bid to save an Oxfordshire town magazine which had been running for 64 years before it shut down just 6 months ago. Window on Wallingford has been at the heart of the South Oxfordshire town since 1962, sharing news and information on what's going on with locals for free. Run solely by volunteers, support dwindled in recent years, and by February, the production of the monthly magazine had fallen on the shoulders of a single person. The lack of a magazine for the past 6 months led to a group of volunteers to organise themselves into a new committee, promising to relaunch the valued resource, beginning with a fundraising campaign to get it off the ground. One of the volunteers, Internal Communications Manager Dean Valla, 48, said the group plans to bring a vibrant new look and feel to the newsletter. They're hoping to raise £1,500 to get it back up and running and are being supported by Wallingford for All, CIC. And there is a photograph of Wallingford Marketplace with the group of volunteers who are doing the fundraising.
Dig aims to reveal buried secrets. Archaeological excavations at a National Trust house in Oxfordshire are exploring and uncovering the popular site's medieval past this summer. A trench has been opened on the oval lawn at the National Trust Grays Court near Henley, where it will remain until July the 27th for its annual Festival of Archaeology. It is the third time archaeologists have returned to the site to see what they can discover of its medieval and Tudor history after excavations were first carried out in 2024. The first excavation uncovered a 13th or 14th century wall to the south of the Oval Lawn, which used to be a courtyard built in the style of a defensive structure with the appearance of a castle. Last year, archaeologists from National Trust and South Oxfordshire Archaeological Group excavated a small 5 square metre trench in the centre of the lawn and uncovered evidence of a long demolished building. It is believed that Sir Francis Knollys, an important member of Queen Elizabeth I's court, demolished earlier buildings and rebuilt much of Gray's Court when he inherited the site in the 16th century. An archaeological survey technique, parch marks, identified a long narrow building linking two sides of a rectangular courtyard which existed in the late medieval period. Parch marks are ghostly features that appear on lawns during hot, dry weather, which trace the outlines of demolished buildings, buried walls, due to the grass above the underground structure drying out faster than other areas. During last year's excavation, the demolished structure was established as a substantial building with broad walls capable of supporting two stories and a roof. Finds included fragments of roof tile, decorative floor tile, and window glass. suggesting a high-status building. Archaeologists speculate that the building may have functioned as a sheltered passageway across the courtyard, with storage chambers at ground level. This year's excavation has opened a trench adjacent to last year's dig site to reveal more of the structure, as there are indications of a brick-built cellar. A second excavation in September will investigate a substantial structure, possibly a tower, which once stood on the upper lawn. Visitors to Gray's Court during the Festival of Archaeology from now until July the 27th, between 10:30 a.m. and 3 p.m, will be able to chat to archaeologists, witness discoveries as they happen, and learn about the site's history. Gray's Court is a family home in delightful gardens owned by the National Trust. Find the house in Rotherfield Gray's near Henley. See nationaltrust.org.uk.
There's only one family announcement today. David Charles Duval slipped away on Saturday, the 27th of June 2026, aged 91 years. Loving husband of Olga, much loved dad of Audrey and Clive, dear granddad of Sophie, Jack, Daniel and Amy, and great-granddad of Zoe River. Family and friends are warmly invited to the funeral, which is to take place at St Leonard's Church, Wallingford, OX10-0HA, at 2 p.m. on Monday the 27th of July 2026. This is to be followed by a private family burial. In lieu of flowers, the family kindly request that donations be made to Sobel House, daviddeval.muchlove.com. On this day, in 2013, the Duchess of Cambridge gave birth to her first child, Prince George, and there's a picture, I assume, of Prince George swaddled up in a nurse's arms. Last year, music superstar Ozzy Osbourne died at the age of 76, just weeks after a Black Sabbath reunion concert held in his home city of Birmingham. The singer, who had been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in 2019, was with his family and surrounded by love. Birthdays: George Clinton, funk musician, 85. Don Henley, rock singer, 79. Willem Dafoe, actor, age 71. Bonnie Langford, dancer, actor, singer, is 62. David Spade, actor, is 62. Rhys Ifans, actor, is 59. In history, in 1298, the English used longbows to decisive effect when they defeated the Scots at the Battle of Falkirk. In 1376, the mass abduction of children from the town of Hamelin by the Pied Piper supposedly took place according to a legend. 1478, Philip the Handsome of Spain was born. After his death, his wife kept his corpse and continued to sleep with it beside her bed for 3 years. Her name was Joanna the Mad. 1812, the Battle of Salamanca took place in western Spain, in which the Duke of Wellington was victorious over the French in the Peninsular War. In 1844, the Rev. William Spooner was born in London. He was an albino and suffered from defective eyesight, and it is thought that this caused some of his verbal confusions, which were later dubbed Spoonerisms. These included, "It is customary to cuss the bride," and "You hissed my mystery lecture." 1933, Wiley Post, one-eyed pioneer aviator, became the first to fly solo around the world. 1934, movie-loving gangster John Dillinger, public enemy number one, was shot dead by federal agents outside the Biograph Cinema in Chicago. 1946, after a failed wheat harvest, bread was rationed in Britain. And finally, in 1986, MPs voted to abolish the cane in state schools.
Before selfies, holiday bragging came by post. Emma fondly recalls the cheerful messages that painted a rosier picture than reality ever quite managed. This time of year, my social media accounts are flooded with pictures of friends lounging near swimming pools in sun-drenched destinations, leaving nobody in any doubt that they are having a great holiday somewhere warm. Their posts, which are often rapidly updated, include everything from adventurous hikes to photos of what they're eating for dinner. That's become the way of things nowadays. You can snap a selfie, type a quick message, and send it to your friends and family in an instant. And if that's not enough, you can get immediate endorsement by means of a virtual thumbs up. Given that I personally think it foolhardy to broadcast your absence from home on social media, it got me thinking about the sensible alternatives of yesteryear. I came to the conclusion that postcards were our way of letting our loved ones know we were having a good time. As with many things in life these days, the convenience of social media has eclipsed the good old-fashioned postcard, making it a rarity to receive a physical holiday communication in the post. But in their heyday, during the Edwardian era, around 800 million postcards were sent in Britain each year. Commissioned by the British Post Office, postcards were introduced to the UK in 1870, according to the Postal Museum. They included an imprinted halfpenny stamp, which covered the price of postage. Printed on one side only, to allow the message to be printed on the other side, and costing half the price of sending a letter, postcards enabled concise correspondence without the formality or expense. Whilst most of us associate postcards with pictures, illustrated postcards produced by private publishers were not accepted by the post office until 1894. In these early designs, one whole side of the card was used for the address and the stamp, with an ultra-concise message squeezed alongside the picture. During the First World War, postcards provided a vital means of communication for troops, taking just 2 days to get from Britain to the front line. However, to prevent possible information leaks, soldiers' postcards were censored and had their captions crossed out to hide the location of the sender. For my family, and probably most in the UK, postcards are synonymous with the seaside. The British seaside holiday became cheaper and more accessible with the expansion of the Victorian railways, and postcard producers were quick to capitalise. Portrait photographer James Bamforth started producing postcards in 1903 and cashed in on the seaside market, eventually achieving notoriety for their saucy illustrated designs. Although we might deem these images amusing by today's standards, in the early 1900s, censorship boards were established to decide if a postcard was suitable for sale. Looking back, we received multiple postcards during the summer from family and friends, even though most had travelled less than an hour to their holiday destination. But the opportunity to tell us what a lovely time they were having was too good to miss. We always laughed when my aunt wrote on her postcards, "Boiling hot on the beaches," when we knew the reality was it had been foggy and overcast, given that they were less than 30 miles away. But whatever the weather, the pictures on the postcards always showed the destination in all its glory, which sent a touch of sunshine back to us. I'm not saying that postcards didn't have their drawbacks. For example, my mum used to source stamp and send hers minutes after we'd arrived on holiday in order to ensure that they made it home before us. Sometimes they would mysteriously get waylaid in the post and arrive 2 weeks after our holiday was a distant memory. On one occasion, a former boyfriend went on safari to Africa and I didn't hear from him for 3 weeks. "I sent you a postcard," he protested, when I complained about the lack of communication. Said postcard arrived a full 3 weeks after he'd returned, and my annoyance had long since abated. It was one of those occasions when a brief message on social media would have been welcome, just to confirm he hadn't been eaten by a lion. But whenever a postcard eventually arrived, there was something special about receiving a physical memento which made you feel as if you had shared the experience in some small way with the holidaymaker. As a child, I thought it odd that you wrote a message on the back of the postcard, which could be read by the postman or any other person who handled it en route. But by comparison to the public nature of social media these days, I guess it seems positively private. For me, there's also the tangible nature of a physical postcard, which eclipses the transience of any social media post.
Back in the day, perms were big business. My column on perms prompted a good response from other fans of curly locks. Our reader picture was sent in by Rosemary Story. Her mother, Beatrice Twigg, born in 1909, was a hairdresser from the time she left school and had her own salon in London. Rosemary told me when she retired, the Science Museum in London collected the permanent waving machine for its display. Before it was collected, she, Mum, used the machine and curlers on my hair so we could take photographs to show how everything was used. The photographs were taken 57 years ago. The machine was made by iCor. The next newer machine was called the Madison Magic. Then the cold perms came in, for which no machines were used. Paul Oscroft trained as a hairdresser in the late 60s at a salon called Bernard of Mayfair in the centre of Birmingham, and had his own salon in the 70s. In the 80s, he became technical trainer for Weller, teaching hairdressers how to perm. Paul said, "When I had my own salon in the 70s, perming was big business, and I had lots of men and women booking in for a perm. In the 1980s, one of the trends was using molten brown sponge rollers to perm with. I still remember the smell of perm lotion when you entered a salon, which they don't smell of any longer."
Saints boss is sorry over spying scandal. Southampton FC manager Tonda Eckert has apologised for his bad judgment after the club admitted spying on Oxford United. The Saints were booted out of the 2026 Championship playoff final in spectacular fashion in May after admitting to spy on Oxford, Ipswich and their semi-final opponents Middlesbrough. The club was found to have spied on the Yellows on December the 23rd and 24th ahead of their trip to the Kassam on Boxing Day. Now, though, the club's manager, Tonda Eckert, has apologised for his part in the scandal that saw his side disqualified from the richest game in football. The German admitted that some of the public criticism had been tough to read and told BBC Radio Solent, "It hurts for a number of different reasons. It's tough to read some of the things that are out there. I've held my hand up for this judgment on something I have authorised." Eckert told Sky News last week that he received police protection amid threats after the scandal came to light when a performance analyst intern was caught watching a Middlesbrough training session. He said, "It's been tough because we built up something, I think, very special over many months, and I've said that in a message to our supporters that I take responsibility for how the season has finished. At the same time, I never had the intention of breaking a rule. I've come into this football club in November and next week I'll be joining the FI for a briefing. I haven't had that in the last season, but I've used the summer to talk to some senior football people in English football and to many managers. I have reflected on many things and I've said this throughout the hearing as well. I never had the intention to bring anything into disrepute. I've taken the time over the summer not just to know all the rules, not just of the FL, but also of the FA, but more to understand where they come from and to understand the culture behind that. Despite beating Middlesbrough over two legs to reach the playoff, playoff final, Saints were disqualified and the North East side were reinstated before losing to Hull City at Wembley. Previous details of Tonda Eckert's side spying on Oxford back in December had been revealed, stating that the Saints boss wanted information on the formation of caretaker head coach Craig Short's Yellows. The U's had sacked former head coach Gary Rowett on December the 23rd and were under the leadership of caretaker boss Craig Short for the festive fixture. Under a new head coach, there were certainly questions at the time over whether the U's would change formation after struggling with a back five under Rowett, which saw him sacked after the 1-0 away defeat to Charlton Athletic.
Gunter is assistant head coach. A familiar face from Welsh football has taken the step into senior club coaching. Chris Gunter, the former Wales international right back, is now assistant head coach at Oxford United under Aaron Ramsey. He brings with him experience from his time on the coaching staff with the Wales national team, where he began working in 2023. Mr. Gunter said, "Coaching is something I have looked at since I was 27, when I started looking at the game in a different way. I've had the experience of the first team environment, working with Wales, leading the younger age groups, and this summer I completed my pro licence. Having that mix of supporting and leading, I've had a really good acceleration over the last 3 years, and I feel in a good place to support in all different aspects." He will work alongside Tom Hutton as Ramsey and his staff prepare the squad for the season ahead. Mr. Gunter described the early weeks in the role as positive and praised the quality within the team. He said, "This is such an important time. The work that we have seen gives an exciting feeling looking towards the rest of pre-season and then the start of the season. There's always a meaning to everything we do. Attention to detail is something that we're really big on as a staff," pardon me, "and that's come out over the last couple of days. With Oxford's first competitive fixture scheduled for Saturday, August the 8th, pre-season training has stepped up in intensity." Mr. Gunter is keen to see how the group translates their work onto the pitch, including during the club's first pre-season match away at Aldershot Town. He said, "Hopefully over the next 3 to 4 weeks before we kick off, that when we get the chance to play games, when we're back and the fans come and see what we're doing, there is a real positive feeling moving towards the season. I know we as staff and players and with the fans, it'll be a really enjoyable ride. Last season ended not the way you would always want to. That's football."
Okay, so that concludes our recording for this week. Stay listening after this track. We've got some select recordings from the monthly magazine, which you can listen to if you'd like to. But for us here recording this week's paper, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Taking flight. Butterflies are vitally important. Their presence acts as a barometer of the health of our environment. Their ongoing decline tells us that all is not well in the British countryside. Wise warning words indeed from Sir David Attenborough, who, among his many other roles, is president of the Butterfly Conservation Charity. The nation's favourite centenarian is urging all wildlife lovers to take the pulse of UK nature by taking part in the Big Butterfly Count between Friday the 17th of July and Sunday the 9th of August. "It's not too late to help," he adds. "You can help ensure that butterflies still bring that sense of magic to our summertime by taking part in the Big Butterfly Count. The count will tell us if butterflies are recovering and let us know how they are faring in our back gardens, parks, fields, towns and cities. But more than that, the count brings us face to face with Britain's wildlife stars living right under our noses. If you care about butterflies, make sure you take part." For many of us, butterflies are stitched into the fabric of childhood summers, peering into buddleia bushes, spotting cabbage whites in the veg patch, or watching red admirals bask in sunshine along a country path. But these delicate creatures offer much more than fleeting seasonal beauty. They are one of nature's most important warning signs. That's why butterfly conservation is once again calling on families, gardeners, walkers and wildlife lovers to take part in the world's largest citizen science survey of butterflies. All you need to do is spend 15 minutes counting butterflies and day flying moths in a garden, park, balcony, school field or countryside spot. The information gathered helps scientists understand how insects are coping with climate change, habitat loss and changing weather patterns. Last year, some 125,000 people took part in the Big Butterfly Count, counting a record 1.7 million butterflies and moths. The striking Red Admiral fluttered into the top spot. In Oxfordshire, 1,391 people took part, spotting 18,040 butterflies and day-flying moths. On average, butterfly spotters saw 9.7 butterflies and moths per count, a 29% increase compared to 2024. And the most spotted butterfly in Oxfordshire was the large white. Conservationists say that every count builds a clearer picture of how wildlife is responding to changing weather and habitats. Butterflies are beautiful, yes, but they're also incredibly important bioindicators. This means that, as they continue to disappear, as they have over recent decades, it indicates something is going seriously wrong in our natural world. We need to heed that warning and take action before it's too late. If we lose butterflies, we lose more than beauty. We lose balance in our ecosystems, and that will have serious repercussions for wildlife in the UK. If you do one thing for nature this year, get out for the count this summer. And there is a website which is butterflyconservation.org/events. Wallingford U3A are a small, welcoming group who meet at Cromarsh Village Hall on the first Wednesday of the month. After Jenny Mallin explored A Grandmother's Legacy, World Cookbook from Days in the British Raj on the 1st of July, Chris Simmond will explore Queen Matilda, First Queen of England, on the 5th of August. Visitors are £3 per person, and their Wallingford U3A has their own website.
Also from the bridge, a historical item entitled A Battle for the Cotswolds. The Sealed Knot will be reenacting a battle from the English Civil War at the Great Two Estate near Chipping Norton under the title A Battle for the Cotswold. It is taking place this August bank holiday on Sunday the 30th and Monday the 31st of August. Although Great Two Park wasn't the site of a major battle during the Civil War, fighting took place at nearby Cropredy, Edge Hill and Stow-on-the-Wold. This was a region marked by religious and political division in the mid-17th century. Lucius Carey, Viscount Falkland, and his wife Lettice, from 1634 to 1639, hosted the Great Two Circle, which strove to find common ground between these increasingly polarised theological positions. Their guests would come and stay for extended periods to read, write, and discuss the pressing matters of the day. During the Battle for the Cotswolds, over 2,000 members of the Sealed Knot will be participating, and visitors can join them to explore what it was like to live and fight during the English Civil War. With cannon fire, charging horses and a full battle reenactment, it will be a great spectacle to watch. Visitors can spend the day exploring their living history encampment, take part in activities, and watch arena displays, including the grand battle finale, where they can witness the spectacle of a battlefield with hundreds of infantry, artillery and cavalry troops as the Parliament Army attempts to take the Royalist stronghold. The Sealed Knot is the oldest reenactment society in the UK, a registered educational charity, and the single biggest reenactment society in Europe. The aim of the society is not to glorify war, but to honour those that died in the many battles of the English Civil War, and to educate the public about those wars and the lives and times of people in that period. And also from the Inside Wallingford website, Wallingford to celebrate its Norman heritage in 2027. Plans are well underway for Turning Point 1066, a major heritage festival taking place in Wallingford from the 30th of July to the 1st of August 2027 next year. The festival forms part of the wider Year of the Normans campaign, an international programme marking the 1,000th anniversary of the birth of William the Conqueror in 1027. Celebrations will take place across Europe, exploring the lasting legacy of the Normans and their influence on history and culture. Wallingford has a unique Norman story to tell. In 1066, William the Conqueror crossed the Thames at Wallingford, a pivotal moment on his journey to become King of England. Our weekend festival, The Crossing of the King, will bring this remarkable episode to life through a weekend of immersive events and activities. Festivities will begin on Friday evening with the return of the Curfew Bell celebration. William will arrive by boat at Wallingford Bridge before leading a torch-lit procession to the marketplace, officially opening the weekend. The programme will also feature a living history encampment, battle reenactments, music, displays, family activities, and a special exhibition exploring Wallingford's role before and after the Norman Conquest. Working alongside partners, including living history group Regia Anglorum, Wallingford Museum and local community groups, the Town Council aims to create an unforgettable celebration of one of the most significant moments in Wallingford's history. And news of some upcoming council events. In Castle Gardens, a concert by the Goring and Streatley Band. That's on Sunday, the 12th of July from 3 to 5 p.m. And the reminder of the Family Archaeology Day at Wallingford Museum on Saturday, the 25th of July from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Can you dig it? Discover Wallingford's past at Family Archaeology Day on Saturday, 25th of July at Wallingford Museum. There will be experts, exhibits and hands-on fun. You can drop in between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Do you fancy unearthing a little local history this summer? Wallingford Museum's popular Family Archaeology Day returns on the 25th of July, connecting you with the fascinating stories hidden beneath our feet. Running from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, the drop-in event brings together local archaeologists, history enthusiasts and curious families for a day packed with discoveries. Visitors can learn more about local archaeological digs, meet experts working to uncover the region's past and explore how archaeologists piece together clues from the past. The event is also a great opportunity to visit the museum's new exhibition, Digging for Wallingford, created by the Wallingford Historical and Archaeological Society, known as TWAS. This showcases local archaeology, featuring everything from Bronze Age artefacts and Roman finds to Anglo-Saxon, medieval and modern objects. A rolling slideshow reveals archaeologists at work in the field, while displays explore subjects including a section of Roman road discovered at Brightwell cum Sotwell and the importance of responsible metal detecting. For those inspired to learn more, guided history walks continue every Saturday until the end of September. Led by knowledgeable members of TWAS, the walks reveal hidden
details and fascinating stories from Wallingford's rich past, and see Wallingford Museum website for further information.